Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Welcome back. And this show is brought to you by the candid sponsorship of Bank of Africa, as strong as a group and close as a partner. MTN, everywhere you go. Ashesi University, educating ethical and entrepreneur leaders for Africa. Robert & Sons Optical Services, your comprehensive eye care service provider for 31 years. Whaley Properties, home is where one starts. Duroplus, where Duroplus goes, water flows. Trasaco Fast Floors, stronger, faster, and affordable. Now, let's go to check out what is threatening on the labor front. And we have heard Dr. Yao Ba of the TUC speak about job crisis and on the strike. Alexander Obeng has been speaking about the neutrality allowance. Of course, many people are appalled at the justification for such an allowance. Let's listen to them quickly. I come to introduce my guest to you and we begin the discussion. But they insist that minimum wage ought to be pegged to the inflation rate.
We work closely with the government, as I've already indicated. And as you know, all of us have the right to make a political participation according to our constitution, from Article 5, Chapter 5, which is the freedom of forming association, freedom of movement, freedom of joining any political party of our choice. But according to the ethics of the work, we are banned from being what active politics, not even assembly member. You cannot stand as a member. So Grossack went to Supreme Court for the interpretation of this neutrality, and the Supreme Court affirmed that we cannot be part or do active politics. In that case, we submitted our grievances to government, that if that what the government is saying, then you need to be compensated.
Okay, so
and from what our executive was saying, government has no plan of paying the neutrality allowance any moment from now. So we had no other option to resume the strike. Yes, so that's why we call our members to reactivate the strike. So from now or today, all the CLOSAC members are to stay home, not going back to the workplaces. We are on strike.
The National Tripartite Committee has started the process towards determining the minimum wage for this year. For us, that is a do and die. We are going to make sure that minimum wage for workers for this year should not be below inflation. And this will be extended to public sector workers as well. So there's a battle ahead of us. And I can see organized labor is ready to fight. And we are going to do that. Strike is a very difficult thing to do. It's like war. So before we declare war on the employers, we have to make sure we have good reason. This time, we have the good reason to do it. Therefore, we caution that the employers must listen to us. And they should not just listen. They should also hear us, because the workers of this country are suffering too much. So the job crisis, you know, predates, you know, Ukraine. The job crisis came before COVID. Therefore, we think that it is not right to blame COVID and Ukraine for every job crisis that we have in this country. That is not right. And we are not going to accept that.
Right. How is government going to be able to take care of the circumstances of the public or the labor front, so to speak, of labor in the current economic circumstances? We're joined by Dr. Kwabena Nyako to his chief economist and director, Labour Research and Policy Institute of the Trade Union Congress, TUC. Joining us also is Godfred A. Bokping, Professor of Finance and Economist at the University of Ghana. Dr. John Ampontia Kuma is MP Ejusu and Deputy Minister for Finance. Here in the studio is Ambassador Sam P. Ali, National President, NDC Professionals Forum, and former Ambassador to India, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, and Maldives. Thank you very much for making time to join us here in the studio.
Thank you very much.
And gentlemen who are joining us via Zoom, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Yes, good morning, Samson, and good morning to our cherished listeners.
Right. Let's begin with the question of what Labour is demanding. It appears to be a very fair bargain that we need to be compensated using inflation as a yardstick. We shouldn't get anything below the inflation rates. What do you say to that? Yes, Professor Bokping.
Okay, all right, thank you very much. I think these are challenging times, and Labour is hit hard. I mean, the reality would lend to their support. Partly also because inflation has gone above even government's own targets in the 2022 budget. Inflation currently has drifted away from even the upper band of the central bank's own targets of 8% with a symmetrical rate of 2%. In other words, the target band from 6% to 10%. So the last inflation rate was 19.4%. Apart from that, you are also looking at this together with other developments within the economy. If you look at on the other hand, in terms of disposable income, if you look at other taxes that have been introduced from 2021, you are looking at COVID levy, 1%, you are looking at sanitation levy. On top of that, we have introduced e-levy. So when you put all these things together, it's like there's no way of escape for the ordinary Ghanaian. Mm. And particularly for workers, or particularly those in the former wage economy where negotiations and all of that probably were tied to inflation at a certain time where it was even less than 10%. And 4 months or so into the fiscal year, inflation has drifted all the way to 19%. Then it means it gets very serious for them. What that presupposes is that the budget for January can no longer deliver the same value in March. Mm. Meanwhile, salary will not change necessarily. It even gets worse for those who are on pension, who are receiving a fixed pension, whatever allowance at the end of every month, and the rest of them, because they have no means of asking any adjustment or so to keep up with price development. And then if you look at the composition of the CPI, the drivers of the inflation, you realize that even if you decide to be very prudent with spending, you can't avoid these adjustments or changes in price that dwarfs the value of your wages or salaries or your income.
From what you understand to be the inflation rate, basically what they are asking will then be what percentage increase in their remuneration or compensation?
I think government will have to negotiate with labor. You also have to look at what the economy can afford. Whether the government has the fiscal space to be able to load on all of that. So some kind of negotiation, honesty, transparency, full disclosure, that says that we appreciate the challenges you are going through, but this is what we are willing to do in these difficult times. This is the roadmap. That will be very helpful, rather than just saying that, okay, let's strictly use the inflation, less than 19.7% and all that. But you're also looking at the outlook beyond this year that is likely to decelerate a bit and all of that. But if you also look at this, you see that though external factors are pushing some of these things, bulk of that is also a reflection of domestic policy failure. If you look at the fact that we have control over some of these things, that we should be able to be self-sufficient in some of them that we have not, and the fact that we then tend to blame Russia, Ukraine for everything. For example, if you look at Africa, Africa has almost 60% of the world's unused arable lands. But we are net importer of food. In 2015, our net import for food alone was $35 billion, projected to reach $110 billion by 2025. That is unacceptable. That's unacceptable. So some kind of negotiation will be very, very important. And I think government will have to open that negotiation quite frankly and discuss. Then, because what makes it a bit difficult for government right now is because of how they pressed the fiscal accelerator in the COVID times. Okay, so the COVID spending took the deficit to a high level because we were just coming from one crisis or the other, from energy crisis, financial sector crisis, then we walked straight into the pandemic. Okay, and all of these things are having a toll on our fiscal strength, so we don't have the fiscal space, but of course, there could be some adjustment that government would want to do and engage with labor that makes labor funds a bit peaceful, which is needed for enhancing productivity. Other than that, if you choose not to do anything, people will go to work and pretend to work even in these difficult times.
Let's see how Dr. Kwabena-Yako to justifies this particular demand. Can we hear you? Hello, Doc.
I can hear you.
Great. I can hear you now.
Okay. How do you want me to just...
Yes. Oh, yeah, justify your demand.
For inflation index wage.
Exactly.
But that is the norm. It's the normal thing we do. That when you go into a negotiation, the least you should get is to restore the value of your incomes. That may have been eaten away, so to speak, by rises in prices reflected in inflation data. But in this particular instance also, beyond inflation, we all know what happened in 2021, but also 2022. When we were negotiating for the 2022 base pay of 7%, inflation was around 9%. Today, inflation is above 19%. In the last 2 years, wage incomes have declined by about 30% in the last 2 years. Now, if you take the whole period that we have implemented single spine, wage income has actually declined by about, in real terms, 8%. So when you put all of that together, plus all the other things happening in the economy, labor is hard hit. And the least we can do is to just restore us to the level of our pay that has been eroded by rising prices. That is the least. But if you want to reward us for hard work, for contributing to economic growth and all that, then you also have to even top it up with a standard of living allowance. You are not just restoring us to the level where we catch up with the inflation. You also give us a standard of living allowance. That is what we expect to happen for 2023. And that negotiation is starting in 2022.
You insist that you will accept nothing below the inflation rate.
Yes.
The question is, you are in the country, you have seen what is going on all over the world, and everybody must make some sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have made huge sacrifice for the past 2 years. Cast your mind back, 4% 2021, 7% 2022, and look at the inflation rate. What level of sacrifice do you want labor to make again? There's nothing. We've gotten to a point where labor cannot reproduce itself. And it's important that we stop the slide. And that is, I mean, to ask for any more sacrifice is to be unreasonable with labor.
Okay, so hold on for me. Let me get to what do you say, Amzalasan Piyali? What do you make of the demands from Labour? And as I started initially, this is fair, isn't it?
Well, Samson, good morning, and thank you for and your viewers. I seriously agree with the previous speakers. You know, because you are looking at demand and supply and the cost, you know, and elimination. How much does it cost the country? Fine, let me ask this question. How much does it cost the country to govern this country? This small country, how much does it cost? We pay the Council of State, we pay this to govern this small country. But the fundamental bedrock of our production is the workers. How much does go to the workers? Is the question that we are dealing with now. Now, I'm told that the minimum wage is about 13.5 cedis. And today, Samson, if you had a car and you were a worker staying at Dansumantu Ministries, how many gallons are you going to use? I likely to use about 1.5 gallons or 2 gallons to and from office. And how much is that going to cost you? So a simple analysis of your expenditure will show that 1/3 or 2/3 of your salary on that day goes to petrol. And even sometimes it's more, go to petrol. You haven't spoken about other things. So I very much agree with TUC and the man who just spoke, that governments have to give workers their due. You know, after all, it is what you give to the workers that you tax them. So if you don't pay them more, you don't get the tax revenue. You know, but over the last 3 years, I'm told, I've seen figures that say that government has exceeded its tax revenue. When I was a union chairman in SNET, one of the issues we looked at was profitability, that the SNET has made profit, and therefore we should get something out of that. Mm. So if you have exceeded your tax revenue, then those of us who worked, you know, to give you those revenues and other things have to take our due. So I very much agree with the call by the TUC. You know, my worry is about the fact that government appears to say that they don't have the money all the time when it comes to negotiations. But the workers also look at so many other factors apart from just the salary. They look at lifestyles of government. They look at government expenditure. They look at so many things before they make such demands. Mm. Because the minister's wife go to the market. The laborer's wife also go to the market. And all of them have to take something home. The tomato seller will not say that because you're a laborer, I've reduced the tomato for you. You know, so this is a quagmire. We are in a situation where we don't know who has the right to demand what. But I think that the workers have the right to demand what they are demanding.
Mm. And then we will tie in shortly the issue of the Clocks Act. Yes, that is, you know, insisting on its neutrality allowance. And I'm going to show you something briefly. If you thought that some of these people are just being unfair in their demands, some of them have an idea what happens. And as some PLA mentioned, Council of State and the rest of them, you forget about those people. If you look at the state-owned enterprises and how maybe their managers or CEOs are paid, their deputies, the allowances and everything that they take, sometimes you come to appreciate why they fight tooth and nail. Some will even kill to be in those positions. And the struggle within the political parties to be given some of these offices, you get to understand. So let me give you an idea. In one of these institutions, the top management, they had what you call a holiday facility. So if you want to have a holiday, They will give you, for internal holiday, they will give you not more than 6 persons and not more than 3 rooms and 5 nights per year. So for a year, this is some sort of allowance you have. You can take your friends or your family and go and have a holiday, whether in Ghana or anywhere. And that is different from your annual leave. And when you are going on leave, you will also get an allowance for that. You have retirement package, and they calculate that at 12% gross monthly salary, which is to be set aside by the employer, and then what the employee will do in addition for you. They have what they call the parting gifts. You get one top of the range multimedia laptop computer of your choice and accessories. If you have been at post for less than 2 calendar years, you get an additional gift valued at 50% of 1 month's gross salary. If you have been at post for 2 to 4 years, you get an additional gift valued at 1 month's gross salary. If you have been at post for above 4 years, you get an additional gift valued at 2 months' gross salary. Then the official saloon vehicle that you may have been using, you will get it. They talk about a right to procure it at a discount of 50%. You have end of service benefits. You get 4 months' gross salary at point of disengagement for every calendar year worked. You have the benefit of a housing loan of about 6,000 Ghana cedis. You have a home enhancement loan of about 2,000 Ghana cedis. You have foreign travel per diem of $1,500. Your salary increase is supposed to be at 20%. Then, and I'm talking about this condition of service being not recent. So this has actually improved, will be far better than now. For some good reason, I'm not making too many disclosures. There are medical benefits. The medical care is provided for the person and their spouse and children of up to 21 years onwards. They also are entitled to mandatory full medical examination once a year. And you know how some of these things are done. Yearly medical checkup, they can get it abroad. Often that's where they get it. Medical facility on retirement. They provided with free medical care for the person and their spouse, children up to 21 years whilst on retirement. So when you are retiring, there's actually nothing to worry about. You have even replacement of your lens if you are a user of spectacles. There's an allowance for that. You get 1,000 cedis, that's yearly. Out of station allowance, accommodation, and meals will be provided for you. Inconvenience allowance. If you think it is only Cocoa Board that they take inconvenience allowance and there's complaint about it, well, they get inconvenience allowance, 500 Ghana cedis per day. 500 Ghana cedis per day as inconvenience allowance. Funeral grants and donations. How you are entitled. There is special allowance also. Household allowance to be paid based on minimum, you know, your minimum SNIT sort of salary. Then you have utility subsidy. You have responsibility allowance, which is about 1,500 Ghana cedis per month. You have entertainment allowance. 1,500 cedis per month. You have satellite TV connection monthly subscription. So if you use DSTV, you don't pay it on your own. It is paid for you, 500 Ghana cedis per month. So it's a long list, and I have done like just half of what one person is entitled as their, let me read just a few more. Apart from maintenance, they have management furnishing. They have security guard, entitled to two nights and one day. So you have two nights security, you have one day security, you have a vehicle, you get official vehicle, you have a vehicle loan option for you, you have executive saloon car to use, you have repayment of cost of vehicle loan, there's a provision of a driver, and all sorts of things, clothing allowance, amongst many others. And so in 2016, in 2015, you would have heard that some people are taking as much as 80,000 plus just for salary, and the allowances don't even come in yet. So people within the civil service, sometimes this is what influences them. You know, John, what do you say?
Good morning, Samson.
Morning, my friend.
Good morning to your cherished viewers and listeners and seniors in the studio. Yes, obviously this is a very thorny topic, and let me acknowledge that workers in Ghana have played a very crucial role in bringing our country to the levels and stage that we find ourselves. And we, as government, we are very appreciative of the role of workers, and we'll continue to do our best to improve the conditions of salaries and benefits of workers in Ghana. The good book has said that the laborer is worth his wages. So whatever we can all do to make the Ghanaian worker a happier worker is also an objective of government. So let me put it that that way. Except that the reality too is that sometimes the available resources do not allow government to push to the levels that workers may expect government to be able to do. Let me just react to a few things. In 2020, we all know the COVID situation that came, but government kept faith with public workers and did not lay off even a single worker, even though we almost had zero productivity in that year. I mean, the entire economy grew by 0.4%. So we all know what we went through as a country. We were not alone. We know the global situation that COVID really sunk every economy into. Then in 2021, of course, we were just coming out of the COVID situation. So government pleaded with workers to also reciprocate the good faith that government showed in 2020. And then we agreed on 4% increment in the salaries and compensations of workers. And then also in 2022, we did about 8% for workers. So the demand for TUC, that they are not going to accept anything below the inflationary rate, is clearly a legitimate claim to make as a starter as an announcement towards any possible negotiation for possible increment of workers' salaries in the country. So that's a legitimate claim to make, except that, as we all know, we will all have to understand the reality of what we are all confronted with and see what we can do. Something, and I heard one of the contributors talking about Ghana achieving revenue targets last year, like 2021, yearly, even exceeded the 57 billion target and did 57.2 billion. But the fact is that 30 billion of all that was collected in 2021, which is about 52.6%, went into compensation or payment of workers' salary. So if you are collecting 57 and you are giving 30 billion to workers, what is left, which is about the 27 billion, is what must take care of all other commitments of government. We are talking about interest payments and amortization, which government cannot do anything about. We have to commit to pay them. We are talking about statutory payments, which government has to pay. We are talking about government flagship programs. We are talking about CAPEX, infrastructure, and all kinds of other obligations that the government will have to handle. So it's not like government is insensitive. If you look at what is available, and I heard Article 71 holders, something, if you check the percentage of Article 71 holders on the compensation basket is 0.05. Something, I don't know if I'm lying, but
I heard that. What's the point? What's the point of that? What's the point of that?
0.05%.
Yeah. What's the point of that?
What is the
point?
Yes, the point is that the even though people have pointed to Article 71 holders as a group of people. Or specially treated in terms of the revenue arrangements, in terms of compensation arrangement of the country. What I'm trying to say is that the component of the total compensation bracket is not much.
It's not
so
much.
In terms of the percentage of what goes to Article 71 holders,
people are retiring. People are retiring on their salaries. It's as if you are working for life. You are getting paid for life until you are dead. You are getting It's like you don't see any struggle, and I just read to you.
Just a second, John.
Okay. I just read to you. So if I'm a worker,
no, I'll get
and
to that one.
If I'm a worker and I'm in a situation where I listed a number of items, but let me just take eight of those items I listed to you for one director general's enjoyment. He has a vehicle maintenance allowance per month of 600,000 per month. And that was increased in 2017 to, what's the amount? It's even confusing me. Clothing allowance. Someone gets 10,000 per year for the clothing allowance. Entertainment allowance. They get 1,500 per month. Household allowance. They get some monthly money, which is calculated in a way I'm yet to figure out, subject to their salary. They get utility subsidy. They get, that's monthly, for their monthly bills. They get responsibility allowance. That's about 1,500 per month. They get satellite TV subscription. It's paid for. And this is before their salary. So if you use somebody like that to tell me that what they are paid is not so much when we take the whole basket of compensation, I think that will not be fair.
Well, I wasn't responding to that, so I wish you had waited and listened to me. So I am not responding to the fairness or unfairness of what anybody gets. I'm talking about the components of compensation. I'll get to that one. And, you know, obviously, if you look at the salary structure of the country, we all as a country have gotten to a point where we have to see reforms. And the details of how this 30 billion cedis we are talking about is even dispersed, who gets what. because we are talking about only 700,000 people of our country out of the 31 million population, or 30.5 million number of the population. 700,000 of us are getting 30 billion, which is, we are told, is woefully inadequate in terms of specifics when you want to go into categories of the unions and each worker and what they get. So who gets what? And this is where I now want to respond to the SOEs, remunerations, the terms and conditions of certain office holders of our country, and what we can all do to achieve fairness.
Yeah, when you speak to John, I brought that in because when you speak to these workers, they give you clues. They are actually, these are the workers that process these salaries and allowances, and they give you clues as to the inequality, the yawning gap, the disparity, the almost criminal disparity in the compensation system.
Yeah, but that's what I have stated, that it calls for reforms and rationalization of the compensation structure. And even beyond that, I mean, how fair is it that 700,000 of our people are getting over 52% of all revenues that we collect in the country? What happens to the rest of the population? So this argument has to be
looked at. Can I come in on this question?
Is that Ben?
No, Kabnautu from...
Yes, Kabnautu, thank you. Yes, let's hear you.
I want to respond specifically on this question of 300,000 people taking 52% of our revenues. Honorable, I think we need to properly situate this in a proper context. These 700,000 people are the ones that are providing all the education this country is providing. They are the ones that are providing all the health that we so eloquently mentioned in our budget. They are the ones that are making sure that the lights are on. They are the ones that are making sure that we have water in our homes. They are the ones that are making sure that the security in this country, the police officers, the immigration officers, and the fire service. So a better formulation would be that the cost of providing this education, the cost of providing this health, the cost of making sure that there's security in this country is the 52% of revenue. Rather than to think that those 700,000 people are receiving something that appears undeserving. And you also
well, Samson, can I come back? Because I thought he was making a brief intervention.
Okay, so I think his point is made. Yes, John, can we hear?
Yes, it's made. Except that I don't agree with the position he took. Samson, you are not part of this 700,000. Are you not part of this nation building? There are several people in the private sector who are opening schools, health centers and hospitals, providing security. They are all part of the nation building.
Okay,
so this is not to take away, you know, I started by commending the role of workers in our country. But we all, if we have to discuss this matter, let's be as objective as we can. I know it's a very thorny issue. And once we want to discuss it, let's just ask as much as we are not happy with a certain group within the 700,000 who are unfairly being treated among others. Let's also look at the bigger picture of the entire country and how best we can rationalize compensation issues in Ghana, and then achieve some acceptable levels that the population, workers and government and everybody will be happy. Because as it stands now, clearly there's a challenge, there's a problem. And how do we handle this problem in the face of the difficulties that we find ourselves? So nobody has said that workers don't deserve more, but we are saying that what is available is what can be shared for everybody. And already what we are sharing, it's way, 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 way above what is even available, looking at other commitments that we all have to achieve. Look, when it comes to remuneration, something, all the things you listed, especially for CEOs and boards of some SOEs, I think that some of them are unconscionable. Because the number one CEO of our country is Mr. President. The president, I'm not sure there's any CEO in Ghana whose job requirement is more intensive than the president. And yet, some of them, if you look at what they are getting, Mr. President is not getting beyond 25,000. We all know the salary of the president. So when you compare that to a CEO of an institution which the president has appointed. Yeah,
yes, but Dr. Kuma, you don't want to invite debate. When you say the president earns 20,000 monthly, we know that's really nothing. We know that what the president gets is not 20,000 monthly. If you are quoting his salary, that's a different issue.
Basic salary. I'm not talking about allowances.
Those are the things that cushion the people that they don't even have to ask for more. Because their allowances alone is far more than what they earn as salary.
And do
I am not opposed to any discussions that calls for reforming or relooking at how things the status quo is at the moment. Because the status quo is not acceptable even to government. Because I've just told you that we are spending too much and not even achieving the productivity that we are looking for. You get it? So we are all in the same home page. There are issues to be addressed. But all I'm saying is that let's address these issues objectively, acknowledging each other's position and knowing how best we can all further the discussions to achieve positive reforms for our country that everybody will be happy with. So that would be my take. Thank you.
You wanted to make an intervention, Professor Bokwing. I think you should come in. What do you want to say?
Yes, if you look at the salary structure, how for top end, we have managed to disclose something to the public. If you say just salary, you just put that naked. But we hide so many things that arrive with it that the public may not know.
We never mention the inconvenience allowance.
Yes, which the ordinary worker perhaps doesn't get.
Prof, help me, and I'll let Dr. Otu also assist me a bit. What do you mean when you say inconvenience allowance? The person is taking all sorts of allowances, getting a salary at the end of the month for performing the job that they have been employed, and yet they are paid an inconvenience allowance. What does that mean?
Probably out of office, maybe work that takes him to a place that ordinarily takes him out of his comfort zone or something. But this is also defined depending on the negotiation. But I think in the public sector, it's almost known. And sometimes the reason people choose to have meetings at certain places so they can check the box for some of these things. But I think overall, the point that ought to be made is the level of disparity and the fact that some people do know, even within the public sector, how much others are taking and all of that. But I think sometimes to the basis of the comparison and the justification makes it look like the ordinary Ghanaian is taking too much. If you say more than 50% of what we generate goes to workers and all of that, but I mean we are talking about individuals here. We are talking about life. We are talking about what the ordinary Ghanaian is left with at the end of the day. We are talking about the fact that when fuel price goes up, probably for certain occupational groups they are cushioned because they get coupon. Four coupon or whatever, but the ordinary Ghanaian doesn't get that. We are also looking at it within the context that this may sound that much in percentages, but it's just because the country is not generating enough tax revenue, and that may not be the fault of the ordinary Ghanaian. Mm. Okay. If
75%, you see, let me. We have the engineer Ben Arthur, who is the CEO of the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission. Joining us. Let me engage him briefly. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and good morning to all our cherished viewers.
Right.
Listeners.
Right. So the TUC says they are wage negotiation. They will not accept anything below the inflation rate. And then we're having a discussion that's looking at the inequalities in the compensation system. Of course, John mentioned Article 71, office holders, including the president. And the president, by the way, doesn't earn 20,000 as a salary. His salary now is about 50,000. That's 47,000 or so as his salary per month. But that's not what we are looking at. The other example that I used, which I need you to help us understand, how do you explain such inequality? And these workers, when they are making their demands, they clearly have a sight of some of these things that go on. So that if a CEO of an SOE, a state-owned organization that the worker is working for, maybe they are even at a certain management level, and they know that their boss, the what he takes for his DSTV alone is more than what they get as a salary. What he takes as inconvenience allowance per day, perhaps is almost what he takes as his total salary. What he takes as fuel subsidy, vehicle maintenance, and the rest of them. And someone is taking 10,000, for clothing. They see all of these things. So when they are making the demands, we should also treat them bearing in mind these inequalities, not so?
Thank you very much. Definitely, you're on point as far as workers are concerned and what they look out to and what they look out for. But I must admit that the government has already recognized some of these disparities and has taken steps to correct them. If Dr. Otu and other contributors will attest to that, government has already agreed to set up a technical committee at the National Tripartite Committee level to review the single spine pay policy. And that was an agreement culminating from the National Labour Conference, which government together with organized labor and employers association organized. So that is one of the outcomes. And government has honored its promise by setting up the committee. So I think on 26, God willing, the committee will be made public to address some of these disparities. When it comes to the SOEs, that is the state-owned enterprises, Fair Wages is currently collaborating with SIGA and Ministry of Public Enterprises to also streamline some of these disparities. And in fact, across the SOEs, there are some also disparities even across them. So Fair Wages, together with the other parties that I have mentioned, are taking steps to ensure that these disparities are corrected. I must also admit that some of these things have existed for quite a very long time. So we have a lot of clauses. You are a lawyer, that you must also be sure that you don't make anybody worse off. But these things must be done with a lot of circumspection. But I understand and appreciate the disparities, especially between CEOs and their directors and the other workers, disparities in the public sector as to the public service and those who are, working in the SOEs. We must also admit the fact that the SOEs have been set up largely by Companies Act that enables their board and other authorizing people to also negotiate and do some other kind of compensation negotiations. But of course, fair wages law is also there to ensure that we are able to coordinate, manage collective bargaining processes. So the steps are being taken, and I'm very positive about it that in the coming months, things will be streamlined.
Mm. Dr. Babwa, thing of the TUC, when he was talking about this situation, spoke to us about, you know, having been arguing over this in the past 30 years. Here we are again, we are talking prospective. I remember very clearly when the finance minister spoke about these inequalities initially for the CEOs of the SOEs, spoke about how unconscionable it was and they needed to be worked on. They finished the whole four-year term and nothing happened. You are still telling us now about collaborating with them and working on these. So the workers down there, they don't see that this is actually serious, that the duty bearers are serious about this. It's just lip service.
Well, thank you. That would be unkind, some, to say it's just a lip service. I sit at Fair Wages knowing very well that especially the newly appointed ones, whom Public Services Commission forward their appointment letters and ask for advice on their terms and conditions. We have tried as much as possible to be harmonizing. Possibly is the old positions that may have this. So a lot of steps have been taken, but because maybe it is not in the public domain, it will be very difficult for you sitting there as the host to immediately appreciate. I think we need another time to re-engage on this matter comprehensively. Mm. But a lot being done. If you get in contact with any of the new CEOs, you will realize that it has not been easy at all, especially when they have known that in previous times, there were some entitlement, and that at this point in time, Fair Wages had curtailed a lot of them in advice to government. So a lot is being done, but I must also agree that a lot more must be done.
Yeah, so from where you sit at the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, the TUC General Secretary, Dr. Anthony Yauban, says that they will not accept anything below the inflation rate, and that ought to be fair. What do you say?
Well, the first thing I will say is to greet him and all his constituents, and not only him, organized labor entirely, especially all public sector workers. It is challenging, I must admit, for government as far as ability to pay is concerned. Let's be very open to the fact. And when it comes to negotiation, whether it is the base pay or minimum wage, the key mechanism that in this country we have adopted for fixing wages is not government throwing figures at organized labor that whether you like it or not, take it. Neither is organized labor throwing figures at government to say that take it, and if you don't take it, we are not going to cooperate. It is an act of negotiation, and we must all expect that definitely you trade something for something. But let me, for purposes of education, mention some key elements that we all consider. One of them is the ability to pay. If an employer has not got the ability to pay, you might go to court, you might do many other things. That ability to pay is a very key consideration. And not only that, the minimum wage, for example, is used as a mechanism to achieve many other things. For example, it is used to alleviate poverty. So we'll be looking at poverty levels, what is the minimum wage floor. We'll be looking at cost of living, of course, as they have mentioned. And you must also be very, very sensitive to the private sector, that you also don't fix wages at such a high level to the extent that the private sector will not be able to create jobs and hire others.
Okay. So we have quickly, before we go to this neutrality allowance thing, You spoke of a committee. Which committee is this?
It's my appeal to organized labor. That yes, we really appreciate the times in which we find ourselves. Cooperation is needed, and I'm sure when we get to the table to negotiate, they will be able to consider all these things.
Yeah, I asked the question that you refer to a certain committee that is doing some work. Which committee is this?
That is the technical committee for the review of the single spine pay policy.
Okay. So this is this working, you know, in conjunction with the tripartite committee, or what is that?
It's a committee set up by the National Tripartite Committee.
Okay. Okay.
And when we say National Tripartite Committee, it is a committee that is made up of equal representation from government, from organized labor, from employers' association, and the sector minister is the chair.
Okay. Now, Dr. Kwabena Nyako Otu, what do you have to say, having listened across the board and also to the deputy minister, Dr. Kuma?
Thank you once again. I think that we need to put the issues in proper perspective. You have a public sector where the average wage today is about 1,800 Ghana cedis. And about 50% of people on that public sector pay structure are earning below the average. And we know this country, how prices are, all the basic things. So for example, in our program this week, we show that it is not only government that has a budget. If you take the one time and compare it by basic foods, housing, electricity, utility, and all the things, we are talking about a deficit of over 100% for households and workers, compared to a deficit of some 11% for government. That has to be bridged. That's the first issue. The absolute level of pay in Ghana is so low that, as I said, it doesn't allow labor to reproduce itself. The second is the inequities. Probably, I mean, your figures you mentioned are outdated figures. There are CEOs whose rent allowance is more than the highest paid person. It's about three times the pay of the highest paid person on the single spine.
That's about how much?
Our CEOs that are taking rent allowance of about 18,000, 25,000 a month, not a year.
You are serious about this? This is true?
Okay, I'm serious. The work I do is to look at employment and wages. They are around, and you see, the fair wages man just says that they are collaborating and they are trying to streamline. The Fair Wages Act, the last of the functions of the fair wages is to negotiate pay in the public sector where public funds are being used. You can check the law. So it ought not to be a situation where you collaborate. They have to take over the negotiations of the public sector SOEs to make sure that they don't give themselves these high increases. In 2021, when workers had 4%, the SOEs, some of them gave themselves 35%. This is unconscionable. And then the other third issue relating to pay is the trends. I have made the point that in the last 2 years, wages or wage income has declined by about 30%. That decline is a figure I'm mentioning, but it actually translates into hardships for a lot of people. Real difficulties for workers that you cannot expect them to be productive if they have suffered such huge declines.
Yes, but until and unless there is this, if you call it, a proper way to rationalize the salaries and remove the disparities, as Dr. Yaban also requests, for now, what you are demanding in the circumstances, current circumstances, you must be willing, you know, to make concessions. You don't agree?
So we are demanding that at least we get the inflation rate. And you see, Samson, that inflation rate will come to say 20%. But I'm telling you that already in 2022, these SOEs using public funds got more than 20%. If their pay is already high and they are getting higher increases, what it means is that we are further widening the gap. Check the 2019 media review of the budget, in which the finance minister stated that from henceforth, given the disparities between single spine and the rest of the public sector, those on the single spine will get higher increases compared to those in the other public sector. But the opposite is what we have been seeing. Compromises. I have made a point that labor has really sacrificed in the last 2 years. And to ask for further sacrifice is being unfair to labor.
Okay. I think Dr. John Kuma should have the last word on this. And then I bring in the questioning of the neutrality allowance. It's difficult for me to mention that, I tell you. Yes, John, what do you have to say?
Yes, I agree with the contributions from the panel, especially from Dr. Benata when he says that we all have to continue to negotiate. But of course, on the negotiation table, you can start from the top with the hope that you are able to ground your arguments convincingly somewhere in the middle or down that is acceptable. I want organized labor and everybody involved in this to understand that government is not against any opportunity that will improve their working conditions, except that we will always want to benchmark that with what is possible and available. We want to continue to talk and engage until we achieve that equilibrium. And of course, let the discussion go on how best we can create more equity in the compensation space. In fact, I agree that there's so much inequities and uncomparable conditions that we have to really rationalize for everybody.
50% of the labor force of this country is earning less than the average of 1,500 each month. Fair Wages Commission.
When I spoke about, we are spending 30 billion every year. Who are those receiving this 30 billion? What can we do to make sure it's more equitable? And sometimes the problem may not even be the available resources, but how they are distributed. Okay. So if we can have a more reform approach to this whole problem and look at the structure and the details of who get what, that's where I started by even citing Article 71, whose payment package has been blown out there beyond certain imaginations. But if you look at the component of that in the total compensation bill, it's just about 0.05%. So that could not be the reason why somebody who deserves more is not getting. So let's look at how we can fairly distribute the compensation package to all workers.
Let's quickly touch on this. The civil service and local government workers, they are crying of bad faith on the part of government that this is something that was agreed, the neutrality allowance, which is supposed to be 20% of their salary. And since the agreement to pay, they say it was noted that the neutrality allowance has not been effected as agreed in spite of official reminders and follow-ups to the Ministry of Finance and Economic Planning. The National Executive Council therefore decided that CLOCSAC should embark on an industrial action to press home its demand for the implementation of the MOU, end quotes. That's a statement they issued and gave that warning. And the strike is supposed to have started on Thursday. Yes, John. Why are you not paying them what was agreed? Is it because now you are having the public, speak against this neutrality allowance?
No. Two key issues for considerations on this matter, Samson. The first one has to do with the name neutrality allowance. That I think that if we don't put it in perspective, we will struggle over form, over we will be talking much about form over substance. In fact, the Clause Act, to be fair to Clause Act, this negotiation started since 2019. It took ended in 2020, early part of 2021, 2022. I think the agreement was signed in January with effective date of February. So this is about 2 years of engagement led by the senior presidential advisor, Fair Wages Commission, and the sector minister, as well as Ministry of Finance. So we have been part of these processes all this while. PROSAC did not come on the negotiation table with neutrality allowance. They came with all kinds of demands and allowances, which they justified. And it could, in fact, if government accepted those ones, that could triple what they were getting at the moment. So government and the negotiation team sought to came to the conclusion that, in fact, CrossAct is the lowest paid group on the single spine structure. This is something ought to be done for them. But in doing something for them, you don't want to create a situation where once you do something for one group, when you are negotiating with one, remember that all the other groups are sitting and watching. So once you do something that they can also tap in, then you open the floodgates and there will not be enough resources to pay. So I believe it is the reason why in trying to couch a term that they thought at the time could limit, could be limited to only a CrossAct, came up with the word neutrality allowance. It is not something that CrossAct actually demanded. It was a term. And so now that, of course, the team have met again, looking at the public position on such a word called neutrality allowance. And I believe that going forward, we may have to re-look at the word neutrality.
Are you shying away from the word because of the public backlash?
On the word neutrality, yeah. We will lose the substance, which is the agreement the committee has that something has to be done. It is what name you give to what should be done. And if the name you are using is creating problems, re-look at it so that you don't generate any unnecessary controversy. But that's what I'm saying. Let's not focus on the form over the substance. The substance is that the committee led by government and CrossAct and everything have signed an MOU that something has to be done. And government is committed to respecting that agreement. And so going forward, we'll look at that. The reason why on the part of government was that, in fact, two key issues. First of all, the date of the signing was in January, and budget for 2022 was read in November. Unfortunately, some way, somehow, it missed the consideration stage of the budget. And so even though government has signed comments in February, there is no budget item for it. For 2022. So that's one of the number one difficulty. Number two difficulty is that we have, the 2022 has become an exceptionally difficult year for government, where even program expenditures of government are going to be cut by 30%. This is the already programmed one, going to be cut by 30%, which even many people have said is even impossible to do. And MOU or engagement, which you are committed to also compensate the CrossAct allowance request. So this is where we are. And so we have re-engaged CrossAct, and we believe that looking at where we are, the team, the committee has been talking throughout the week. I've been part of it. Dr. Benata has been part of it, the sector minister, and CrossAct leadership. I strongly believe we'll come to an amicable settlement of this matter very soon.
All right. But, let's hear from Dr. Bokwing. How do you understand this particular issue, and again, having listened to the deputy minister on it, CLOSAC had issued a statement, and it said notice of intention to proceed on strike due to non-implementation of neutrality allowance. And then they warned that despite the agreement, the MOU being signed in January, they have sent reminders and nothing is happening. In that regard, they were going to begin a strike from the 21st of April.
I agree to some extent and the input from the deputy minister, because there's a general acknowledgement that what people are taking is just not enough. The way to prop that up without distorting the base pay and cause agitations across different occupational groups, then we tend to use certain names or descriptions to set them apart from the others. But whatever name or form that it takes, what labor is looking for is that they are cushioned. And I'm not too happy that government, going into the negotiation, signed an MOU with understanding that it wasn't in the budget. But I believe that the budget preparation started way back last year. Mm. Presentation was made last year. And if my understanding is that negotiation was concluded early part of this year and government signed with the knowledge that there was no budget line for it. I'm saying this because we need to do all these things to build trust between labor and then government, so that when labor is going to negotiate with government and is even making concessions, then they are certain that even when it is signed and it's even small, it's going to come, and that there will not be another explanation, you know what, we didn't budget for this and all of that. We need to do this together in such a way that it creates trust and all of that. I think I also agree that the timing and because of the rising inflation, it makes the situation a bit difficult for even those at the lower end of the salary structure. And therefore, whether is you call it neutrality, you call it non-neutrality or whatever, I'm not too sure they care that much. I think what they are looking for is that something ought to be done given rising inflation, taxes and all of that.
There's public outrage, and clearly it has influence the subsequent reactions from even members of CLOSAC themselves and the government. Otherwise, earlier, there was no question about what the allowance was. Neutrality allowance. And they have continued to justify that it is being paid so that they get cushioned for the privilege that they don't have to participate in partisan activities.
Yes, but for the, as we discussed earlier, some of these government appointees get all kinds of allowances that probably, if we look at it, the ordinary worker may be entitled to some of them, but probably we don't want to put them in the same category and all of that. And that is why I'm saying that the fact that we focus so much on the word neutrality without looking at the underlying issues, for me, is a bit concerning. Mm. And that is where I think we need to sympathize.
Isn't it important that the public is outraged that their tax money is going to be used to pay people for what they have signed on to do already? If you are signing on to be in this civil service, it is a constitutional injunction on you. They also have their manual, their HR manual, that prohibits them from engaging in partisan political activity. And they are saying that they ought to be paid and compensated for restraining themselves from doing such things. The outrage is that how on earth will anybody sit in a meeting and agree to pay people such an allowance?
Yeah, something. In fact, initially when I heard that, I was like, wow, what is this? But You know, you need to lift the veil. The public wasn't part of the negotiation because, as we are told from the deputy minister, it wasn't part of the things they were demanding in terms of what they put on the table. I'm sure from the deputy minister's point, it came from government that let's use this description rather. Maybe so to that extent, I think we need to understand because there are a lot of things that went on in the course of negotiation that maybe the public wasn't privy to and all of that. And that is why I'm saying that fine, but let's look at the reality on the ground so that we do not major on the minor in this particular instance, that what they are taking and the fact that what they came to the negotiation table and all of that, this was what probably was agreed and all of that. We may not be too comfortable with that, but an MOU has been signed, an agreement has been reached and all of that. I think we need to find some quick way of addressing that because look, Samson, what we are talking about here has a broader macro level effect on the country. Because salary levels are low, taxes are very high, particularly indirect tax handles and all of that, it's very difficult for the average Ghanaian worker to save and accumulate capital for something meaningful in this economy. These ordinary workers we are talking about, when they go on retirement, they retire on the strength of the law. Their pension is so small, but many of these government appointees we've talked about retire on their salary with so many things and all of that. And you know, a couple of years ago, when we talked about this single spine, the understanding was that it was going to resolve all of this. But here we are today. So we are talking about a technical committee. We are talking about all of that. Fine, medium to long term and all of that. But in the immediate, and now, 2022, I think something has to be done in order to cushion labor and some kind of negotiation for the medium to the long term.
Okay.
We have to approach appropriately.
I'm Sam Piali. The reason this has become a topic for discussion is the name for the allowance, neutrality allowance. And some are now asking whether we should be paying judges to such an allowance, paying teachers and whoever they are, what sort of an allowance. So the question has been about the wisdom in whoever agreed to make such a payment.
Well, Samson, the whole discussion this morning is to see how we can make organized labor happy with the negotiations that are forthcoming. Not so. I'm wondering whether we've been able to resolve it. You gave us a litany of allowances, very unquestionable allowances being enjoyed by some people. We are not talking about ability to pay on that side. We are not talking about technical committee on that side. We are talking about ability to pay technical committee and audit for the ordinary worker who is on minimum wage of 13 cedis, 50 pesos. That's where the problem is. Because the single spine, like the deputy minister was saying, was to have rationalized all this so that there will be equal balance in the salary structure. But now it is tilted so much to the side of the big men. Somebody would have worked for about 40 years, 45 years. He goes home without pension. Somebody does 4 years in parliament. How much does it take? For a country of 30 million, we are 30 million, we have 13 Supreme Court judges. 13 Supreme Court judges for 30 million people, all of whom will be retiring on their salaries and allowances. These are the issues we should be constructively be looking at to reduce the wage burden. I am not too sure it is fair for the deputy minister to say, oh, only 700,000 people are taking that much. The 700,000 people are the ones that have brought this economy where it is now. What about those hangers on? Those who are just hanging on. There are some people whose duty is just monitoring social media, and they're taking huge sums of money. We as a country agree that from 606 presidential staffers, we should go to about 1,009 plus And all these 1,009 plus, we are buying Land Cruisers and other things for them. If we cut down on certain expenditure in this country, we will be able to look at the workers properly.
Yeah, but it is incorrect to suggest that all the appointees under the presidency have Land Cruisers and so on. Some of them are just your ordinary civil servants who must do the very basic civil service work.
Samson, you and I know that every government appointee in this country has a Land Cruiser or something close to a Land Cruiser.
But the category of people that you spoke about, we know that a good number of that category is actually civil service people or public service people.
I am talking about government appointees, yes. Not the civil servants.
No, I'm talking about the incorrectness of your statement that all these 1,000+ appointees within the presidency,
yes,
we are buying Land Cruisers for.
Samson, even in addition to that, go to the ministries and look at what the chief directors and the top echelon of government officials are using. Go to every car park of this ministry, this country, and you see what I'm talking about. It's not a misstatement at all. But let me come to this whatever neutrality allowance you're talking about. You see, Samson, public confidence and trust is very important. It's very, very, very important. It's not because somebody complains, your child complains that, oh, daddy, we don't have that, don't have that, and then you give him anything at all. The public servant, the civil servant, is by the Constitution enjoined to be neutral in politics. Mm. That is what at least the law says. So if by my own choice I decide to work in the public service, then I am forewarned that I will not take part in such partisan politics. But as to whether that is even the true situation is another matter.
Mm.
Because I am in NDC. I know of many, many government workers who are members of my party.
Okay. Let me pick very brief comments from the TUC and also the Fair Wages Commission on this very briefly so that we go for a break and return to the politics of election victories. And I start with Dr. Otu on the question. There's a statement from one of our listeners or viewers who says that, Samson, it is not just the name or letter which is the issue. It is the thought of the spirit of that letter which is absurd. The job is for politically neutral people. If you don't want to be neutral, simply leave. Don't ask to be paid to be neutral. It's insane. What do you say?
Giving me a brief comment, but I have a lot to say on this. And the whole discussion tells me that the entire public sector pay regime ought to be overhauled. If you go back a little bit into history, Singer's Pay was installed to avoid negotiating in silos so that there's full disclosure and there's full transparency. The consultants that worked on the Singer's Pay before it was installed counted over 70 allowances in the public sector. And the conclusion was that those allowances make the emolument in the public sector non-transparent and non-fair. So we should avoid. Now we are back to a situation where we now have those multiplicity of allowances. And for many public sector workers, that allowance you are taking is not counted when you are being paid a pension. And we should always bring our mind back to the fact that the low pay we are receiving in the public sector will eventually reflect in the low pensions that we receive. The minimum pension in Ghana today is 300 Ghana cedis for a pensioner who probably has higher health bill and many other expenditures. And significant number of Ghanaian workers or pensioners actually receive that 300 Ghana cedis. And to let you know, the highest pension in the country is also 142,500. So the inequities in pay, it then reflects in inequities in pension. Samson, so the CLOSAC letter quoted that government has agreed to pay neutrality allowance. That letter couldn't have been different from what was in the MOU that was signed. Okay, I'm from Labour. I mean, if something is taken away from you, you can't engage in politics. Your human right has been suspended for one reason or the other. You guys go to court, human rights court, you get compensated. But when we went to the Labour conference, one of the things we wanted to avoid is to deal with labor issues in silos. Because as the deputy minister stated, you solve one problem and then you create another problem. It's important that those whose rights have been suspended and who are being compensated with a neutrality allowance, we make it comprehensive. And here I have a list. The Electoral Commission, they are not supposed to do politics. Our members are there. They ought to be compensated with neutrality allowance. The National Media Commission, the National Commission for Civic Education. If I have about 36 of such institutions in the public sector that are not members of CLOSA, that are our members, and in the interest of fairness, this neutrality allowance ought to apply to them, and we will make sure that it applies to them. Hmm. That one, you can take my word for it. It is very important.
Okay. Hello, Benatha. Yeah, if we can get your view from the Fair Wages and Salaries Commission, just a minute on this as well. Obviously, this is set to further distort the system, isn't it?
Thank you very much once again. My first comment is an appeal to organized labor, especially the Civil and Local Government Service Workers Association, to come back to work. They are a very integral part of government machinery, both at the local level and at the central level. As government continues to engage, I associate myself with what the Honorable Dr. John Kumar has said, and he had put the correct details in public, which is the right thing. It might be a question of nomenclature, but obviously, from whence we have come, it is needful that you also don't stifle, especially the lowest paid on our pay structure. Government does not take delight in making anybody worse off. And I must state that it is not in Fair Wages interest or not in government interest that you pay so low to the extent that productivity is also affected adversely. But what I will say for now is that government continues to engage closer on this matter, and that they should call off the strike for us to continue to engage. There is one.
Are there not people in labor that you have already approved this kind of allowance for? Is it fair to deny CLOSAC this?
CLOSAC is not being denied what is due them, not at all. That is why I'm saying that government continues to engage, and that is the way forward. In fact, prior to the strike action, we have been engaging them. But unfortunately for all of us, they carried through the intention. What is important at this point is that we need to continue to engage. And to engage, and that is a way forward.
All right. Thank you very much. Kweku Nkibuye Siaku says, government should allow civil servants to participate in partisan politics. What it would mean is that governments will also be free to hire and fire civil servants as they wish and as they deem fit for their programs and policies. Guess who will be more at risk? Your guess is as good as mine. Then Ebenezer Kwenu says that there are a section of labor who are giving allowances for their forbearance from engaging in active partisan politics. The only service not enjoying these allowances are civil service and local government staff. It is also important to state that all the services that enjoy these are on different salary structure and are not on the single spine salary structure. We are just demanding for what is rightfully ours. The name of the allowance means nothing. It's just a form over substance argument that we are engaging in. Interesting. I'll return to read some of the messages on this particular subject to you before we check the credibility of the EIU report that puts the NDC in a good place to win the 2024 general elections. And then it has something also to say about Dr. Bawumia's place and Alan Chiamantin's place if elections, the MPP wants to win elections. We'll be right back.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your $1 a month trial today at shopify.com/records.